folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner here with my co-host,
Tom Majure.
And Tom, we are doing a four-part series called Is Your Estate Planned?
Yes, we're doing this one on four general powers of attorney, which begs the question, is there more than one type of power of attorney?
And we had a Strong Tower Radio Today program that did an overview. And so we have two special people here that did that with us, and then now we're following up, delving more into what we covered. We have with us Joel Nephew, Director of Planned Giving and Trust Services with the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists.
Glad to be with you again.
And we also have an attorney who specializes in estate planning, Matt Ramosco.
Great to be here again.
And we've been talking to Matt off mic about a lot of things, and it's very interesting. And attorneys always have stories. And especially maybe when you come to wills and trusts and things, there can be those nightmare stories.
There is, and after almost 20 years, I think I've seen it all, but I'm always surprised.
You never know. Okay. Well, like Tom had said, this segment is going to be about general powers of attorney. So, Matt, what is a power of attorney? Just because my mother had me sign, I was her power of attorney.
So are they short or tall? Or
So a power of attorney is just a document. So when you're acting for a family member, you're the agent or the agent in fact. The best way of describing a power of attorney is it's a document which gives the authority to act to another person for specific legal or financial matters.
Only when they're alive then, not after they've passed away.
Only when they're alive. So once they've passed away, that document ends. And so many times I've had, and Joel's probably seen this too, where somebody will come in and say, I went to the bank with my power of attorney document and the bank won't talk to me. Well, the agent you're acting for, the principal, has died maybe months ago or years ago. So the power of attorney is just sharing your powers with somebody else.
While you're alive.
While you're alive.
So that begs the question, who takes over once you pass away? What is that person who does your estate?
If you have a will, that would be your personal representative. If you have a trust, it would be your successor trustee.
Which is different than power of attorney.
Absolutely.
Can they have some of the same functions, except it's at a different time and place?
It does. And when we talk about these documents, we're talking in general, like the title of your program, estate planning. So estate planning consists of a number of documents. It deals with wills, like we talked about in the first segment, trust, like in our second, and powers of attorney is a third. So whether you do a will or a trust, I tell people you really need a power of attorney because there may be circumstances in which you need somebody to act on your behalf. Great example is taxes. We take it for granted that we're going to be around on April 15th and have the ability to sign our tax return. What if you're not? And if we're married, we take a lot for granted with a husband and wife relationship. Legally, a spouse, just because you're married, you don't automatically get rights to sign on behalf of your spouse. A lot of times you run into that. Well, I signed for my spouse, and the cable company seems to be a little upset with me. Appropriately so.
Yeah, there you go.
So are there different types of powers of attorney documents?
Absolutely. So the first general type is whether it's durable or not.
Oh, so, durable or not.
Yes.
So does that mean a durable power of attorney or just power of attorney? Is that what you mean?
No. What I'm saying is we could have a power of attorney. So you could act for me. But if I am no longer able to make my decision, your power may stop because you're sharing my power. With a durable power of attorney, if I'm competent or incompetent, you still have the ability to act. Most of the powers of attorney documents out there you'll see today are general durable powers of attorney. So whether I'm competent or not, you still have the ability to act. Then it's when does it become effective? Now there's two general types. It's effective the immediate I sign it. So the moment I execute or sign the document, I share my power with you.
You own your house and you make me to be a durable power of attorney.
Yes.
I could come and sell your house whether you wanted me to or not.
If that's one of the powers I put in the power of attorney. And that's where we see this too. Sometimes we limit the time frame or the ability. So under your hypothetical, I may be gone out of state, so I want you to be able to sell my house. My document may only say that you can sell my house, put the property description, and say that you can sign a document. But that doesn't give you the ability to sign my car that's in the garage.
Very good. When should a person consider making a durable power of attorney document?
Today works.
Today? Okay.
Really, this is one of those documents that you hope that you won't need. But when you need it, it's like insurance. It will be there. So a lot of times what we see is when somebody comes in and says that they need this document, sometimes they're not competent to sign it anymore. We see this a lot in generational issues. Parents will come in with their children. They'll understand that they're lacking a little bit of ability and they need help. But when you do an assessment with somebody, you'll find out that maybe they don't truly understand what they're signing. And ethically, you just can't have them sign that document. So then you have to go and get a conservatorship or a guardianship for them. We never want to be in that situation. So what these documents do is it limits your exposure to the court because we have a document giving somebody the authority to act for me.
So I kind of heard between the lines, you don't want to wait till it's too late.
You don't. And what's amazing, and I have a number of these on my desk right now that I'm finishing up, I'm actually doing powers of attorney for younger adults, 18, 19, 20, especially when they're going away for college out of state. The parents want to have the ability in the children to work together, and that way it gives them the security that when they're at college, they have somebody that can act for them.
So you have a parent, well, they're starting maybe some dementia, or sometimes they forget things. I mean, I know we're all getting older and we do forget things, but you know what I mean. But then there's other times they're very lucid. They know everything. They can sign. How do you determine if they really are lucid and they can know what's going on?
The attorney will do an assessment. And what they have to do is they have to determine whether they have the capacity to understand what they're doing, whether they're going in through any type of undue influence. Is the child bringing the parent there with the shove them in the door and mom and dad need this, so go ahead and sign it and make me the agent so that way I can quote unquote take care of their stuff. So we really have to look at the circumstances, but that's one of the reasons, again, when do you start doing your power of attorney? Today, tomorrow? Because you don't want to be put in that situation.
So what should a person be considering when they're thinking about doing this? I mean, I'm hearing like we need to do it today.
First thing they should consider is the scope of the power of attorney. How much power do they want to share with the individual? I hit kind of the big categories. Number one, do you want them to have the ability to deal with your financial matters? Next, property. Do you want them to have the ability to buy or sell? If you have a business, do you want them to have the ability to come in and deal with your business assets? And then governmental, do you want them to have the ability to deal with the IRS, with your tax for the Michigan Department of Treasury? And then finally, what do you want them to do, if anything, for estate planning? Now, a lot of times people will say, estate planning is off the table. You know, I've done my will. I don't want them to have the ability to touch that, or I don't want them to have the ability to touch my life insurance. And that's fine. So sometimes it's not only what we put in that they can do. Sometimes the power of attorney will also indicate what they can't do.
So you're saying that this power of attorney can be very specific. This power of attorney, this paper document, is going to say what they can do.
Yes. A lot of the ones that I do will say you specifically can't do these items.
Okay.
Just so there's no misunderstanding. And the important thing about this document is we're really trying to impress the person that we're presenting it to, right? If I'm the agent for somebody and I bring it to the bank, I want to make sure that that bank teller looks at this document and understands the powers I have to act on another person.
You can't do any business unless that it's honored, that this document that you present, it's got to be clear enough that some third party interprets the way the originator wanted it to be interpreted.
Absolutely. And a lot of powers of attorney will also have situations in which there will be a hold harmless for the third party. So if the third party, let's say the bank in our hypothetical, allowed me as an agent to remove funds from an account, they don't have to worry that the principal, the person I'm working for, is going to come back and sue them. And the same for me as an agent, right? If my principal tells me, you know, Matt, go out and take $1,000 out of my bank account, I do it. I don't want them coming back to me, especially if they're in a pre-dementia situation or dementia, and saying, I never told you to do that. You know, I want to sue you in small claims court for now taking that money out as I directed you to. So there has to be some protection.
So Joel, who should a person select as their agent?
Well, typically you want to select someone that you trust, and not just, well, I trust him because he's my son or my daughter, but has proven themselves trustworthy. And again, that brings out what Matt has been mentioning, that, you know, give this some thought. Yes, start today the process, but do it now and don't wait until later when you have to do it quickly, because you want to be able to think this thing through. You want to talk to the individual, because it is work. This is not something that, oh, yeah, okay, whatever. I mean, it can end up being a ton of work before that individual is released from that, either through the person's desire or death, released from that responsibility. So it needs to be someone that you have vetted well, you trust them, that they will not take advantage of you and the situation that they may find themselves in.
So Matt, have you ever run across somebody who was a power of attorney, they did not know it?
Yes. And this is one of those situations, it's really key on communication. If you're going to select somebody to act as your agent, you want to make sure that you tell them. And I also like the idea of giving them a copy of the document, so that way they understand. They changed the Michigan law a while ago where agents actually have to have a written acceptance now. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because they not only understand their duties and their limitations, but that means that they've read the document and are willing to take the job.
Now, Matt, we talked about irrevocable documents, power of attorney documents. Can these be revoked, rescinded, terminated?
Yes, but you have to be competent to do so. So if the person that under your situation has dementia and they were competent when they signed the document and they now decide that they want to revoke it, if they're not competent, they really shouldn't be revoking it. The other thing is, it also depends on when the document is effective. Now, we talked about the durable power of attorney effective upon signing or execution. We also have what's called springing powers of attorney, which means when something happens, that power of attorney becomes effective. And a lot of times, the power of attorney becomes effective upon somebody's disability. And we have to define disability in the document. And a lot of times, it's kind of threefold. Number one, I could say I'm disabled. I know it doesn't sound right, but a lot of times your example is just right on. As somebody gets older, if they have some mental issues for cognitive, they know if they're having a good day. And so a lot of times they'll come in and say, I'm having a good day today. We need to talk about something.
Because, yeah, they do know.
Yep. And at that point they say, you know, I'm having a good day. I really want my agent to start working for me. So I'm going to resign and indicate that I want them to act in writing. The other way is sometimes we have doctors making determination. So let's say we may have a doctor or several doctors make a determination of competency. And then finally, the court can make determinations of competency, but we really don't want to go down that route unless we actually have to.
You don't want the court to decide.
Correct.
So if a person's dissatisfied with what their agent's been doing because they had this power of attorney and they're lucid, what do they do?
They can always fire them.
Okay.
They can change the document. They can ask them to stop doing it. And there's been a number of times, unfortunately, where I've come in after the fact where the agent has actually taken money or acted inappropriately. And unfortunately, we end up either turning it over to the police or we sue them under a civil action.
Sometimes a parent has given this to whoever it is. And then they start realizing they're spending their money. They're doing things that they shouldn't be doing.
Or I had a case where the child was so nice to their parent that they bought the child a brand new car as agent with the parent's money. And occasionally they took the parent for a ride in the car. So Joel's example is just right on, and that is you really have to pick the correct person. And a lot of times, just because it's your child doesn't mean it's the right person.
So on the other side, what if the person that's designated wants to resign or get out of this relationship?
They can always resign. And that's another thing about your documents, whether it's a durable power of attorney effect upon execution or upon disability. You want to make sure that you have successors. You want to make sure that there's always backups for who you name. Because sometimes when it becomes effective, the person that you named may not have the ability at that point in their life to do this.
Well, what if they'd already passed away?
Right, they could predecease. Absolutely.
So this is in your will?
Nope, this is a separate document called a power of attorney.
If I had somebody, I had my daughter, she's my power of attorney, and then she passes away, I have no power of attorney.
Well, you would have a backup agent.
In that power of attorney.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And when we say power of attorney, the power of attorney is actually the document. The person that acts on our behalf, we either refer to them as an agent or an agent of fact. So a lot of times people will come in and say, I'm the power of attorney for mom. Well, you're the agent for mom under the power of attorney document.
What I want to make sure I got clear, there's this power of attorney, and I've given it to my daughter. But in that document, if something has happened to her or she decides she didn't want to be, it's stating in there, then what happens? There's a backup power of attorney? Is that it?
Yep. There's a successor agent. And many times, I like having three. I like having three levels. So you have your primary agent, you have your successor agent, and you have an alternative successor agent, because we've talked about this before. You should review these documents every 5 years. Chances are you may not do that.
Now, what happens if you need to have a power of attorney document and you don't have it?
Well, that's the problem of there's always a backup in the court system. The probate court is always a backup, and that is the judge can make a determination that the person needs a conservator to be in charge of somebody's estate. But by doing that, they basically say that the individual is no longer competent. These are painful hearings to go through.
And that person, are they present?
They're present, so they have to go through that emotion of seeing people testify against them. Mm-hmm. You bring a doctor in to make a determination. You need a petitioner, and that's usually a family member. That's pretty hard to sign a petition that says, Mom or Grandma's not doing well anymore. We need to have somebody appointed.
I would assume, as you're describing this, almost with emotions, I think I hear you saying, this is a tough time on the person that it's being administered to. It's I can't imagine that. It's at times.
I only will do one or two of these a year.
Okay.
When we said who should have a power of attorney, everybody, and they need to do it now.
Right.
Way before they need it.
And that's what we keep, hammering on, is that we need to get this done now so you don't have, in the crisis mode, having to deal with it when the emotions are ramped up and it's much, much harder.
So this applies to everybody. This is across the board type of thing. It applies to everybody over the age of
18.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter if you're married or not, you need a power of attorney. Is that right?
Correct. And some people say, well, why do I need a power of attorney for my wife? And I mean, we our joint bank account and all this. Well, a good example of that is if you ever had to, go to the Secretary of State office. We don't buy new cars, we buy used cars, but you buy a new car to yourself. And instead of both you having to go to sign, I take that document, I go there, boom. I don't have to take theirs, go home, have my wife sign it, bring it back. So it's a very handy document to have, even when things are good and there are no crisis going on. It's a good document to have.
So what about if you have minor children? Do you have a power of attorney for children? I know, and when we were talking about wills, I mean, we would have, you want a guardian, but do you need power of attorney for your children?
Absolutely. So Michigan has a statute that you can name somebody to act on behalf of your minor children if you're not available. So let's say I leave the state or I leave the country. I can leave somebody to be the agent for my minor child. And the big items that you usually see is education, so they have the opportunity to interact with the school, or you see this a lot in medical issues. I want to make sure that if I leave the state or leave the country, that my child has the ability to have somebody there to protect them for financial matters, for school matters, and finally, and more importantly, for health matters.
Even if you're leaving them with a family member, an aunt, an uncle, a grandparent, you need to have a power of attorney?
Absolutely, yes. And the reason that you want to do that is, again, you're dealing with a third party. You go into a hospital and they're trying to protect themselves, right? They want to make sure that the person that's there has authority. And it's nice to say I'm the grandparent. But like Joel is indicating, just because I'm a family member doesn't give me automatic rights. And so you really want to make sure that the third party that you're dealing with, or the school counselor, you know, maybe the child's in the principal's office, hopefully not, but you want to be able to go over there and talk to the principal and talk to the counselor so you're not violating any of the child's rights that they would normally have.
So for lots of times, and I can remember, you know, us doing this, we, you know, we're going on either mission trip or, you know, going to be out of the country especially, I would leave a handwritten note dated, you know, that gives this person permission if my son needed medical attention or something. That's not a power of attorney, is it?
No, it's close. You know, it's better than nothing, right? I also have Tom's question. Is that better than nothing? okay, sure. but the document is usually entitled A Limited Power of Attorney for Minors. And again, you're trying to impress the person that's looking at the document by saying, hey, I'm okay with this. I'm not going to be sued by this person, or when the parents come back, I'm not going to have to explain why I was talking to this individual based on this one line signed note.
So I heard you say limited power of attorney for minor children.
Yeah, you're not giving up your rights. You're not saying I'm adopting this child out, or you're not giving them out. You still have all the rights that you do as a parent. You're just saying I'm sharing these limited powers during this specific time. And the one in Michigan is limited to 6 months. So that can only last for 6 months.
How many different kinds of power of attorneys are there?
Man, I think we've gone through now four, right?
Yeah.
So we've gone through the general power of attorney where it's effective upon signing. We've gone through the springing power of attorney, which happens upon disability. We have talked about a situation where minors. The fourth one ends up being a power of attorney that we never think of, but we sometimes deal with. And that is sometimes in documents, especially real estate documents and mortgages, you sign, and somewhere in that document, that 30-page mortgage that you sign, there is a power of attorney that says the bank has the ability to act for you. So the reason I say this is people may have powers of attorney that never even think about it. Or in business situations, a lot of times I would give my partners a power of attorney to act for me if I wasn't available. This is not a bad thing. You just have to realize what's out there and what you're signing. And though this goes a little bit far afield from estate planning, always read the documents that you're signing, your mortgage documents, your closing documents for real estate.
Yeah, 30 pages?
That's usually a short mortgage.
I know. Well, and I had that one time. We got to the closing. It took 4 hours because the guy was not going to sign anything he hadn't read. So that was, I learned from now on, any mortgage, they're dealing with a mortgage company, you have to send that client all the paperwork so they have looked at it ahead of time.
Days in advance sometimes.
Yes, because 30 pages is a short one, you're saying?
Sometimes, yes.
Okay. So if a person wants to make a power of attorney document, how do they start that process and who do they need to contact, Joel?
Well, they can contact us at the Michigan Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. Our number there is 517-316-1520, and we can answer some questions, and we'll actually ask some questions to determine what they need, and then we can refer them to an attorney, one of the ones we work with, or someone in their local area that they can make contact with and get that important document or documents in place.
Because everybody needs a power of attorney.
They
yes.
do.
Yes.
And what happens when they don't have a power of attorney?
Then, unfortunately, we're at the probate court. And again, I said, kind of alluded to before, like Tom indicated, this is a very emotional time. You just really don't want to go into court and having somebody declared incompetent. You don't want to have them go through the, what I'm going to refer to as painful process of taking their rights away from them. So, you know, this is one of those things that Out of all the documents we've talked about so far in this series, wills are definitely important. Trusts are an option, but powers of attorney are really something that everybody should have. And again, I think that today is probably too late. Maybe tomorrow is a better time to do it, but it needs to be something that people do very quickly.
You know, people mention that this proverbial taking the keys away from your parents at a certain age, going through this process is probably even more demeaning than taking away a set of keys.
It really is. And unfortunately, I've been in that situation. I'm a little bit more creative. I usually take the spark plug wires.
Okay.
Occasionally flatten the tires. But, you know, it is a process. And I think we all have to realize that as we get older, that we may not have the abilities today that we will in the future. I got to admit, I'm going to be younger today than I will be tomorrow.
Yes, that's right. Well, folks, you've been listening to part 3 of a series that Tom and I have been doing called Is Your Estate Planned? And we've had part 1, which was about last will and testaments. Part 2 was about trusts. And this was today, general powers of attorney. And Tom, we didn't really get into about the healthcare power of attorney.
That's in the next segment, so stay tuned.
All right, folks, listen next time when we will cover durable power of attorney for healthcare.